listening to the newest podcast in Manhattan, Kansas. Purple Project Podcast will return after this.
And push it out.
The Purple Project Podcast is on. Going behind the scenes of Kansas State Athletics, from the action on the gridiron to the octagon of doom, and much more. Plus making rounds about the happenings in the community. Triple P is loud and proud and ready to take charge in the Big 12 Conference. Podcasting to the Little Apple, Kansas City, and the world. It's the Purple Project Podcast. And now, here's your host, Eddie Greer III.
What is going on, K-State Nation? Another edition of the Purple Project Podcast Weekly is on the air. My name is Eddie Greer, host of the Purple Project Podcast, all about the happenings and what's going on here in Manhattan, Kansas. That's where I live at right now, obviously. The Purple Project Podcast, for those of you new to the podcast, all about what's going on in K-State Athletics, Kansas State Wildcats, Kansas State University here in Manhattan, Kansas, which is aka the Little Apple. We got a jam-packed episode here tonight as I record this podcast here in the month of January. And oh, by the way, wouldn't we go remiss? This is the first episode of the new year. 2022 is on. Of course, before I bring on my co-host, as usual, the Purple Project Podcast, and I must say this, it's starting to pick up a little bit here, a little bit the last few weeks on this podcast in particular. And we thank you guys, K-State Nation and others, for subscribing and downloading the podcast wherever you get your podcast, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Audioboom, and a few more outlets out there. Traffic is picking up, and I'm not going to mess around here. Let's go ahead and bring on my co-host as usual for the weekly edition of Triple P, none other than the man who lives outside of Kansas, San Diego, California, where I don't know what the weather is right now, but I know here it is 13 degrees as of Corner's podcast, Alex Aiden. Alex, what's going on?
Well, you asked about the weather, Eddie, and I told you that the weather had been really better in Kansas in December than it was out here in San Diego. But everything has returned to normal, Eddie. Everything is finally, after 2.5 weeks of highs in the 50s, lows in the 40s, rain all day, life is back to normal, Eddie. Life is back to normal in January in California. It's currently 54 degrees here, so it is warmer, and today was 72 degrees is the high, 72 and sunny, so back to Southern California weather. It'll be 70 and sunny tomorrow. So the rainy December, cold rainy December is gone. Sunny and 60s and 70s is imminently future. And yeah, I'll tell you what, Eddie, mentioning sunny and 60s and 70s, it was sure sunny in Houston last night for K-State. Gene said he wanted to kick LSU's ass. Well, they kicked LSU's ass, Eddie.
They did. They sure did. Ass kicking. Yep.
Gene got what he wanted. Now, hey, you know, I don't know if the announcers necessarily had their A game. They thought Nebraska was still in the Big 12.
Oh, gosh.
Apparently, they just couldn't, you know, they were just some huge, massive underdog with only 38 scholarship players, even though, get this stat, Eddie. LSU had on the field yesterday more 4- and 5-star athletes than K-State has had on the field the last 5 years.
Yep.
So, look, I am very grateful that LSU played the game. They very well could have done what UCLA did. They very well could have done what Boise State did. Very well could have done what, there's another one that I'm blanking on, Eddie. Texas A&M. But A&M did. They could have done what these schools did and just took the easy way out and made an excuse and canceled it because of COVID issues. Especially what UCLA did, canceling it the day of. It's just ridiculous. And Texas A&M just whatever. So. Anyway, they could have very easily taken that You know what? To LSU's credit, and I'll tip my cap to them, and I'll give them credit where credit's due. I appreciate them not doing that, and, you know, saying, you know what, we're going to play. You know, we got enough guys to play, we're going to play. And so they came out and they played. They knew it was going to be an uphill battle, but they did it anyway. And so I do appreciate LSU for that.
Yeah.
But I do find it funny that LSU fans are talking about, oh, you know, well, we had no chance to win this game, blah, 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 blah. Yet they're so upset with K-State fans for being happy about winning the game, and yet they also want to brag about the recruiting. I don't get it. I don't get it, LSU fans. You guys seem all over the place. So I don't know what's going on. I don't know. You're all over the place. But point being, doesn't matter. K-State.
Don't matter.
Dominant in their win over LSU. That is what matters. And that was great to see. So it made up for a lackluster basketball game all before that, where K-State had seven players total on the court. They had six scholarship players available. Carl Lengard was starting to put it in perspective for everybody. And so, you know, but you know what? That's the name of the game right now in athletics. So no one's going to get far. Sorry for you. For that happening. It's kind of frustrating because you felt like K-State actually might have had a size advantage against Texas. That might have been where they could have had some success against them, but you're with me. Of course, you're without EZA going for Bradford, so you pretty much threw that out the window. But, you know, tip of the cap's Chance Outwell. It was really cool to see him coach a game, Eddie. It was really cool to see the former K-Stater out there. I watched him, as did you, in college. You know, he was there when we were there, and so we got to see him on the court during our college careers, and so it was really cool to see him on the sidelines. Oh, he actually did a really nice job too, Eddie. Good for him. And you know, I will give the K-State basketball team credit. They fought. They definitely fought against Texas. Texas top 15 team. Let's not forget that top 15 team. K-State was winning by six at halftime. They played real good in the first half. They just hit a wall, Eddie. They just hit a wall second half. They didn't have the legs. They got tired. They started making some bad decisions. They started fouling. And it was all just results, in my opinion. The fatigue catching up to them. You get tired, and once you get tired, you start committing silly fouls. You start shooting some silly shots, and it's kind of what you saw from K-State. You just didn't see the same execution, that same crispness, and you got a lot of guys running on, damn near 40 minutes in that game because you just didn't have a bench. So no one's going to feel bad for you. No one's going to feel bad for you. You know what? That was still a relatively gutty effort by them. They never gave up. They kept trying to claw away there. And really, the third big thing, Eddie, the women's team, how about them? You go out and you beat Baylor. You beat Baylor by nine. That wasn't even a game that K-State just squeaked out at the end either, Eddie. I mean, that was a game. K-State beat Baylor. I mean, they legit beat Baylor. That was not that close. That game was not a terribly close game. It wasn't a blowout by any means, but K-State had control that game. So to get that win against Baylor, huge for them. And then as we were talking about before the podcast began, they played Oklahoma State team on the road, but you know what? You go out, you win that game by 11. I don't know if that team wins that game last year, so.
No.
I don't care if Oklahoma State's a mad team. You're coming off a big emotional win. Being able to go on the road in the Big 12, get a win, you'll take it. Any day of the week. Any time of the year. So, kudos to them. They're 12-2. It's apparently not enough to get them ranked yet, but. They are 12-2, so they seem to have turned a corner. So while the men's team is still kind of struggling, at least the women's team has turned a corner, and Jeff Mitty's seat seems to be a little cooler.
Yeah, we were talking about last year on this podcast, Jeff Mitty being on the hot seat coming in. Things didn't get turned around. January 5th, 2022, Jeff Mini has his squad at 12-2, and you're 2-2 against ranked opponents. You won two in a row against ranked opponents. There, you're 12-2. You're coming off of just maybe less than an hour from beating Oklahoma State 60-49, and Ayoka Lee wasn't actually the story in this game, even though she did put up 18 points in this one. No double-double for Ayoka Lee in this game tonight. The story was Briley Glenn, career high in her freshman year already, put down 19 points to lead K-State in this one. There to help K-State put away the Lady Cowboys tonight in this game. Her final line, Briley Glenn, shot 8 of 14 from the field, 2 of 3 from downtown, 19 points, and added 3 assists along with that. I talked about Ayoka Lee just moments ago, 18 points, 6 rebounds for Lee, coming off of a epic performance against Baylor last weekend. Serena Sundell continuing to put up the assist numbers. She added 5, 7 assists and 7 rebounds. She's going to be one of those players, Sundell is, that could possibly, she's getting better by, she's already good, but she's getting better by the game. She's going to be one of those players that going to sneak in a triple-double at some point. I'm going to go ahead and say it. A little early prediction, bold prediction.
Okay.
I think she's going to put up a triple-double and make a little history. The way that she plays, I really love the way that she plays. So, distribute the basketball really well, and she knows how to handle the rock. Definitely as a freshman coming in and starting right away for Jeff Mini, that's pretty impressive as well. Rebecca Dollinger, a big story off the bench. 23 minutes, 8 points off the bench for Rebecca Dollinger. She shot 50% from downtown, and that's exactly what the K-State team shot overall, was 50% from downtown, 51% from the field in this game tonight. And unlike the men not getting a little help from their bench, and particularly Mike McGurl, which I called out on the daily I recorded, which will come out tomorrow. This women's team getting help from the balance scoring from the bench. Everybody scored off the bench last weekend against Baylor. That helped out to knock off, which was ranked 10th ranked Baylor. And here, everyone played, only 2 players scored, Dollinger and Jada Moore. Jada Moore had only just 2 points in 8 minutes of action, 0-2 from the field. But K-State, not only getting heavy minutes from your stars, obviously, but you're getting some key contributors every night off the bench, Alex, wherever it's a Dollinger or a Laura Mackey or a Simone Goodrich. Simone Goodrich has been there, seems like forever, for K-State. So that's the key right now. 12-2, you're 2-0 in conference play here. If I can move the tab over to my standings here, K-State, Alex, at the recording of this podcast, locked up in top of the standings with Iowa State, who's also 2-0 right now. So what a turnaround that Jeff Mini has done, especially he's doing it with a kind of rebuilding mode. I heard a podcast, I think it was the game on site at Houston for the Texas Bowl, which went down last night, which we'll talk about in the second half of the podcast. But Jeff Mini turning this program around last year. I don't think they win this game last year. I don't think they even beat Baylor. Obviously, Baylor was coached by Coach Mackey. Now I forgot her first name. Can't think of her. I don't want to say it on here right now. My mind is going all over the place. But yeah, never mind. Anyways, but yeah, you don't beat Baylor, obviously. But yeah, I'm punting. I'm putting that away. I'm getting rid of that. But anyways, it'll come back to me here shortly. I guarantee you that. But yeah, now K-State, you turn around, coming off an emotional win, get a big win on the road. Like you said, Big 12 play, whether it's the men's or women's, it's hard to get a win on the road, especially with this conference. So K-State, Jeff Mitty's team right now, sitting tied atop. Now, obviously, OU sitting behind there, 1-1. Texas Tech and Texas, who's ranked 9th in the country, sitting there at 1-1 as well. So Alex right now, 2-0 for the Ladies right now, 12-2. And this rebuilding project right now is starting to come into fruition a little bit now.
It is, and you know, they needed to get Oakley healthy, and that was really the biggest thing that we talked about when we talked about the women's team at the end of last year. We said that you've got a once in a decade type of player, and you've got to surround her with help. You can't just play it. And that is what it kind of felt like. It kind of felt like she's one of those players in college basketball right now. And just to see what you were putting around it last year was just really, really disappointing. And so to see them be able to surround her with some more talent this year, and see that talent coming to fruition and helping out, getting balanced scoring, getting just better play on both sides of the ball. That's big time for them, and I think we'll make it stick here. I was talking about one player, but I mean, it's kind of that superstar effect. You hear about it in the NBA. You know, you got superstars. You've got to look. The superstars makes the team. There's no denying it. You've got to fill that team then, though, with good role players. Role players around that superstar. It's not gonna matter. I said this last week. Take it from someone whose favorite team is the Portland Trail Blazers. You've got a superstar and Damian Lillard on your team, but the front office has not done a good enough job at surrounding him with the talent that he needs to for the Blazers to play at a championship level. Now, have they given him enough to get to the playoffs every year? Sure. But have they given him enough to be a full championship contender? No. Now, am I saying the K-State women's basketball team is going to be a championship contender? No, that's not what I'm saying. Pump the brakes, everyone. Don't put words in my mouth. Everyone listening to this podcast, even though I just put the words in my mouth, not you. But anyway. But the point is, she needed more help. She needed more role players around her. You're getting that from them now, and it's taking pressure off her. And it frees her up to be even more, just that much more efficient on the court. You mentioned it. When you get Glenn going from 19, 8 to 14 from the field, that's going to help. that's going to help. Aokalee, she only had 18 points, but she was 8 or 11. She was really efficient.
Yep.
Efficient from the court. That's what it's about. It's about being efficient, about being within the flow of the game, within the flow of your game plan, within the flow of that offense. And, that's when you're going to get some of your best results. You know, it's not – part of the reason that attack is so good is because I don't know if anybody depends, but I'm just using an example. He's so good at it because he's so good within the flow of K-State's offense. He doesn't force anything. And that's why every game we're talking about, Nigel had 15, Nigel had 16, Nigel had 17, Nigel had 14, Nigel had 16. It's because he's so good at just letting the game come to him and playing within the flow of the game. That's when you're at your best. You're not trying to force shots. You're not trying to force plays and make plays. And I'm not saying that that's what Oakley did, but she doesn't have to worry about having to carry the entire burden. She can let Glenn go for 19 points. You know, she can let Sundell have her game when she's hot. You know, she doesn't have to carry that burden. It just makes K-State that much more dangerous. So, you know, they're now 12-2, 2-0 in Big 12 play. And I think that you look at the schedule, they've got a tough one on the road against West Virginia this weekend. But if they can get past that one, then all of a sudden you've got the 13-1 Iowa State Cyclones, who are ranked 12th in the country, coming to Bramlage a week from yesterday, so I believe it would be next Tuesday, and you could potentially have a matchup between a top 10 Iowa State team, depending on what they do this weekend, who could be potentially 14-1, going against K-State, who if they can get a win, they could potentially be 13-2. going into that game. So you could have a really big, big game next week at Bramlage, depending on kind of the way things shake out. And they've got Iowa State's got TCU coming up, and TCU's 4-5 on the year. So I think that that's a pretty favorable matchup for Iowa State. They're also playing them in Ames. So I think there's a good chance they get out of there with a win. I believe that Iowa State is coming off of they play tonight as well, and I don't need to jump too far ahead, because like I said, you've got the West Virginia game on the road.
Yeah.
But Iowa State played their last game was against West Virginia, and they beat them by 16 points, 88-72. So if you can beat them, you could have quite the matchup there, and Bramlage, and it could be another opportunity for this women's team to get another win against another ranked team and continue to really build that resume. And at some point, Eddie, you know, just depending on the way things go, if they can get West Virginia, and then they can pull an upset against Iowa State and Bramlage, all of a sudden you're looking and you're like, okay, this team's 4-0. You've beaten two of the top teams in the conference already. Okay. I mean, at that point, maybe you look at the women's team and think, maybe this team could do some stuff this year. Maybe they could compete for a Big 12 title this year. You know, maybe they're on the table. Too early. Looking that far ahead. But if you can get the win against West Virginia, and you can get a win against Iowa State, all of a sudden you've got two wins against the two top teams in the conference right off the bat. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out, Eddie. But boy, complete 180 of the way we were talking about this one team a year ago, because this time last year, we were probably talking about them blowing another game, blowing the fourth quarter lead, or not finishing, because they just didn't finish last year. They blew leads, they didn't finish games. And honestly, that's probably the biggest thing, Eddie. That's probably the biggest thing we should hit on, too, that we haven't touched on yet. That's what they found. They found a way to lose games last year. This year, they're finding ways to win games.
Yep,
they
exactly.
Won close games. They finished. They played well in the fourth quarter. We didn't see that last year. We never saw that last year, ever. So, tip of the cap to them for doing that. Hopefully they can keep it up.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
First show of 2022, the Purple Project Podcast, weekly edition. Alex in Eddie Greer. Eddie in Manhattan, Kansas. Alex out there in San Diego, California. Both K-State graduates, and now obviously alumni that do the podcast weekly, every week. Yeah, big kudos to Jeff Mitty's team for, I mean, still early on the year. You touched on that. Still early in the year. This team so far is finding ways to finish games. So you talked about West Virginia. That's the next opponent that the K-State ladies are going to be playing. They're going to be going on the road on Saturday. Meanwhile, on the other side, the men also are supposed to be playing, as I switch my tab over, they're supposed to be playing West Virginia as well, if I'm not mistaken, as well this weekend too. So both teams, yep, yes sir. So it's going to be K-State West Virginia Day on Saturday. So the men play at 1 o'clock, tip-off Central Time. This game will be, the men will be on the Big 12 ESPN Plus. There's your plug once again, Alex, the ESPN Plus network there, right there. And then the same night in prime time, the ladies will take center stage against West Virginia as well. So hopefully it will be, if you're a K-State fan, listen to this podcast, folks, K-State sweep. But it's not going to be easy going up there against the Mountaineers, because they produce pretty tough teams up there, and for the men. And now that we switch gears to them being shorthanded. And Alex, you did not mention a player that has not been on the court for the first two games in conference play, and that's Marquise Noel. The spark, that the engine that goes, that gets this offense going for K-State. He has been somewhat missed. Now, obviously, Mark Smith's big double-double against Oklahoma was not enough. And obviously, I'll get your thoughts on that here in a little bit. On that, Mark Smith, 25 points, 16 rebounds, if I recall there. He was on it there. But yet, K-State finds a way to drop that game there. And of course, last night, as we record this podcast on January 6th, tonight, that K-State shorthanded. It was nice to see Shane Southwell on the sidelines coaching. I mean, yeah, when we're in school, he was the lead dog almost, the go-to guy to make key shots for the K-State as a player. He's really worked on his craft as a coach, and it's been nice to see that transition now onto his resume. He's found a way to recruit good guys, get guys over to the transfer portal. So it's nice to see him working his way up as a player. And now one of the assistants he was over at Robert Morris before coming back to K-State here in the Little Apple to basically, quote-unquote, come home and work on some of those routes that he did. Bruce Weber did to him while he was a player. So that was awesome. But on the same side, no Davion Bradford, no Casey Ziegu, or no Marquise Noel. That's three guys that you're missing right there. Especially Noel. Even though Nigel Pack had his usual, I think he had 14 or 15 points last night. But Selma Miguel.
21.
Oh, yeah, 21, yep. I was a few points off, my bad.
15 in the first half. Yeah, 15 in the first half.
Yeah, that's where I got that from. Yeah, because I saw a little bit. I kept track of this on this game. Obviously, I was watching too much into the football game last night. But, yeah, I was in and out of the basketball game. Selma Miguel had 12, and then you don't get really no help from the bench. And particularly, Mike McGurl, only 2 points. And Luke Kusupi, I think he's been inconsistent, only 2 points. Well, you would think that he would at least, he's had some, he had a setback a year ago, obviously, and trying to work through it, but this is his second year here on campus, and he's still not really producing. So we all thought he was going to be this three-point shooter, and so far, I haven't seen it. I ain't seen nothing, so.
And he shot 18.5% from three last year. This year, he shot 22.7% from three. He just doesn't, he isn't shooting it. He has not, his field goal percentage is 33.3 on the season. I don't know what it is, but he's not making shots. He hasn't made shots. He's been at K-State. I'm not sure why it is, but that's head scratcher.
Yeah. So, I mean, hasn't produced, so I don't know what's going on there on that end. And we have Carlton Lingard starting there. Then you know, obviously, then there's a situation there. No Chris Lowry or Bruce Weber last night in this game. As K-State now drops to 0-2 in conference play, 8-5 overall. Their next opponent, I just said a few moments ago on the show, is West Virginia on Saturday. And hopefully, they can get their coaches back on the sidelines and at least most of their players back on the roster, hopefully, before going up to Morgantown. But obviously, of course, we all know by now, depending if you're vaccinated or not, the way COVID-19 regulations work, if you're a K-State athlete or any athlete for that matter in college. And now I had a train of thought, now I lost it, so now I'm gonna have to get it back. But anyways, K-State, yeah, there we go. So I mentioned Oklahoma a few moments ago, and a name that I didn't even know, he was coaching this Oklahoma Sooner team that is gonna bring up some nightmares for us K-State Nation, Porter Mosier. We all should remember him from the Loyola Chicago. In that Elite Eight run that K-State was on a few years ago with the big three of Cam, Barry, and Dean, which I think Dean did not play due to to injury. He did play a little bit, but he was hampered, of course, back in.
He tried against Kentucky.
He tried against Kentucky. Yep.
Team game, and he got some minutes. He got some play, but I think in that Kentucky game he realized this isn't gonna.
He played in small spurts in the first half. I remember that game very well. That's still one of my favorite games as a K-State.
Oh, God.
Oh, my goodness. That was some game.
It's right up there.
It's right there. One of my favorite K-State moments so far to this point, anyways, at least for basketball is concerned, for that matter. But Porter Mosier, that head coach of the Oklahoma Sooners, and K-State had their moments. Especially during the first half, they fall behind by 11, work their way back into the ball game, and then, of course, Harkless makes a big two-point conversion and one on Mike McGurl, Nigel Pack, and there were some K-State fans and some media. I'm not going to call them out. I want to, but I'm not going to do that. That were questioning Nigel Pack's shot. Three-point shot to try to take the lead there late in that game there. And I'm on the side that, hey, I'm okay with that shot. That's one of your best players,
100%.
If not the best player. Now, obviously, Marquise Noel, he's been scoring the basketball. There's no question about that. But Nigel Pack, that's your guy. That's your guy you're trying to build around. We talked about Aoka Lee moments ago about putting the talent around her. You got to put the talent around Nigel Pack. And I have no problem with that shot whatsoever. I don't understand some of the folks on the old Twitter that I read about being pissed off about Nigel Pack taking that shot.
How often have we seen Nigel Pack hit that shot? That's what I want to say to people. We have seen him hit that shot multiple times. He hit that shot against Texas in the next game. And, I mean, that is a shot that Nigel Pack can hit. We've seen him hit it multiple times. Is it what someone expected? Like, look, in a perfect world, would you like to get something a little cleaner? Maybe a little closer to the basket? Sure. Fine. I get it. But you know what? Bruce said it after the game, and I don't have a problem with it. He said, that's what we drew up. Like, that's not a bad shot for us. That isn't. And, you know, what was our complaint, Eddie? What was our complaint in Marquette? K-State's down by one in that game. Marquise had the ball. And I think at the end of the game, I came on the podcast, man, they should just, Noel, he had a shot. I mean, it was a deep three.
Passed it up to Ishmael.
There was a guy in the area, but we've seen Noel hit that shot. And he was hot, and I was like, I just would have liked to see him take it and just see what happens, because that would have been a better percentage shot for K-State than what they did passing it up and trying to go to the baseline. well, now that's what happens. You know, you get Nigel, and he got to deep three, but he's got his shot. He's got his speed set. He gets off a clean look. That's all he can ask for. It didn't go in. Everyone's like, oh, you know, this shot's too, you know, it's too deep. It's too, you know, not a good enough look. Well, would you prefer to have Masood go baseline again and get stuffed? I mean, would you prefer Nigel Pack getting a clean look at a three? I prefer Nigel Pack getting a clean look at a three because we know we can hit that shot. So, what with you, Eddie? I don't have a problem with him taking that shot. If anything, I'll tell you what I've got a problem with. And I'll let you finish up the basketball summary here before I go on a tangent.
All right, okay.
But if anyone wants to be upset with anything, be upset with K-State getting down 27-12 in the first half. I mean, be upset with K-State putting themselves in the position to have to take that shot. I mean, that's what you should be upset about, if anything. You shouldn't. I didn't have a problem with execution there. What I had a problem with was what K-State did in the first half of that game, digging themselves in, following a trend and getting behind early. And it ended up biting them in the butt, you know. That, so if you're gonna be mad at something, I think that's what you should be mad at, not the look that Nigel got. Because he got a clean look, you know. He got a clean look.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Yeah, he did get a clean look there, and fortunately, it didn't go in. Oklahoma gets the rebound, and that's that. So, put a bow on the basketball talk. So, the K-State men are going to have to find a way as we keep on rolling here on episode 81 of the Pearl Project Podcast, weekly edition. K-State's going to... Go ahead.
I didn't mean to cut you off. I just wanted to say, that game against West Virginia is huge this Saturday. Just to finish, just to put a complete bow on the basketball, that's huge for them, because if you can't get a win against West Virginia, beginning the season 0-3 in Big 12 play, just talk about, talk about playing from behind off the get-go in your Big 12 schedule. I know it's going to be hard to go to West Virginia and get a win, looking at how depleted they are with COVID right now, but Eddie, they start 0-3. You're 8-6. You're 0-3 in Big 12 play. Yes, you do get TCU at home in a game that you would absolutely need to find a way to win. But, I mean, after that TCU game, you're talking about ranked Texas Tech, ranked Texas, ranked KU, ranked Baylor, four ranked teams in a row. I mean, if you can't beat West Virginia, you start 0-3, and, I mean, you could be looking at potentially like a 1-7 start in Big 12 play. I mean, they really could use that game against West Virginia. I mean, I'm not going to call it a must-win, but boy, they need that game, Eddie. I mean, that really is going to hurt them, I think, if they start 0-3. So, that Oklahoma game, I said it, Eddie. I said it right before the Big 12 season began. I said, gosh, that Oklahoma game. I said, they really need that game. Like, Oklahoma was down three guys, too, Eddie. They were down three guys to
COVID. I didn't know that. Yeah, I didn't know that until after the game.
Yeah, they had it. They dinked around for the first 10 minutes of that game, first 15 minutes of the game. That's why they lost. It wasn't because they weren't the better team. K-State had the better team on the court that night. They just dinked around and let Oklahoma push them around for the first 10 to 15 minutes. You know, when you're dinking around like that at the beginning of games, which we've seen them do, that's just going to happen. It's going to bite you in the ass, and they ended up losing the game they should have won. So,
yep. That's
just disappointing. It's disappointing they put themselves in that position. But look, now I think you need to find a way to go make it up in Morgantown. Because if you lose in Morgantown, you've now lost two games in the road against unranked teams. You got to win games against unranked teams in the Big 12 this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. So K-State men have a mountain to climb. 8-5, 0-2. And start off conference play, man, it does not get any easier. Go to West Virginia. It's a K-State West Virginia doubleheader on Saturday with the men first and then the women in prime time. So we'll see if the men can somehow, some way get a win in Morgantown. It ain't going to be easy, like I said a few moments ago, but K-State, they're going to have to start off. They're going to have a good start. I mean, that's been kind of what's been hurting them so far this year, falling behind. They fell behind Wichita State, but found a way to win that game. Fell behind against Oklahoma, did not win that game.
Nebraska,
same thing. It's been the pattern. It's
Arkansas.
Been Arkansas, same thing. Yep, I think they did that against Illinois, too.
They did it against Marquette. I know they did it against Illinois.
I don't think it was back and forth. Marquette was back and forth.
Was back and forth. And yeah. Illinois really got behind and early. But yeah, it has been. Oh, hell, Eddie, why are we even talking about big games? They got down 21-13 to McNeese State before the game before Oklahoma.
That's right. Yeah.
I mean, even in some of these, they were tied at halftime against Florida A&M.
Florida A&M, oh yeah. Yeah, you bring him back up.
They've done it against everyone.
Yeah, you bring him back up some old wounds there early on this season there. Yeah, Florida A&M, they struggled a little bit there, and having to ride Celton Miguel late to win that ball game there. So yeah, K-State, they're going to have to find a way to get themselves motivated in the first half. That's their problem right now.
They did a good job against Texas. Yeah. Credit, they did get out early against them.
Yep, they did, and cut the lead at one point in the second half when I checked in on the game because I was doing Flint Hills basketball games last night. I checked in on it, and the second half with, 8-7 minutes left, they cut it to like 6 or something before Texas finally put it away. So K-State did fight. They did fight, but they don't have enough ammo right now. And hopefully that ammo will be replenished when they go to Morgantown. They can go out there and play a full 40 minutes instead of 35 or 30 minutes or however you want to call it. Purple Project Podcast Weekly rolls on. Eddie Greer, Alex Aiden. Now it's time to move the show along to football. Last night, K-State, in my vocabulary, easy win. Sorry, LSU. Easy win over the LSU Tigers, who obviously did not look the same team that we've seen in past years. K-State just made everything look easy. 42-20. Of course, LSU scores in the final play of the game, an 81-yard bomb there to end the game. But K-State, pretty much from start to finish, just dominated the game. And Colin Klein, kudos to him with a good game plan, kind of taking a page from Bill Snyder, his former coach, Bill Snyder, there with the time of possession, keeping the ball away from LSU, even without their star players, keeping the ball away from them, keeping LSU offense off the sidelines, and it worked to perfection. Deuce Vaughn went off against LSU there, and Deuce Vaughn, being at Heisman Cannon next year, I don't know what is, but Deuce Vaughn, another 100-yard rushing game, and Alex with the numbers. I don't know how many 100-yard rushing games Deuce Vaughn had, but I'm pretty sure, if I take a guess, that's got to be either 6 or 7 100-yard rushing games for Deuce Vaughn. I know at one point he had like 4 in a row or 5 in a row at some point like that, so if I take a guess, it'll be either 7 or 8. Could be off by a game, but You bring the stats. So.
I'm looking at
it. You bring the stats to the show, which I like. So that's that. While he's looking at that, Skylar Thompson. Speaking of numbers, actually, Skylar Thompson in his 40th career start, final game for K-State. He was brilliant, especially under pressure, getting rid of the ball when the pass rush was close to him as well. So Skylar Thompson, 3 touchdowns through the year in this game. As I look for the scroll, there we go. On that one here, as I now go there. Okay, yeah, Skylar Thompson, 21, finished the game. His final game at K-State, 21 of 28, 259 through the year, 3 touchdowns. And, well, he's only sacked twice, so I take that back. But still, a proficient final game for Skylar Thompson there. All he's been through. What a way to go out for Skylar Thompson. Deuce Vaughn, 146 yards on the ground, 3 touchdowns for Deuce Vaughn, and add in 2 catches, but he only had a net of -3. But that's not the story. Deuce Vaughn showing why he's one of the better backs in the country. Leading receiver, Phillip Brooks, 5 catches, 69 yards. Malik Knowles found the end zone twice in this game. 3 catches for 42 yards for Malik Knowles. He kind of had an outcome party a little bit there. And K-State, they were down kicker in this game. Didn't matter. We didn't need him because K-State were putting up touchdowns, going for it. Chris Kleiman, Colin Klein, being aggressive with the offense there as well. Ross Elder, what a second half of the year for Ross Elder. Had a big game against Texas and had a big game here against LSU last night. A total of 11 tackles. 9 of those were assisted there, but Ross Elder was all over the field, including an interception return for 32 yards. Daniel Green, 6 total tackles, along with Cody Fletcher. Julius Brents, 5 tackles total. Rush Yeast was all over the field as well, 4 tackles as well there. By now, Alex should have found the numbers there, as I will pass it off to him, give his thoughts on the game. And but before I do that, you mentioned the broadcast You mentioned a broadcast crew last night.
Yeah, the Big
12
Nebraska.
Yeah, they're off. They're way off in points last night, including people, K-State people on Facebook and Twitter, and I'm right there with y'all. Very upset. Brian Kelly, they were talking to Brian Kelly while K-State was on offense. Weren't even paying attention to the game. K-State scores, and funny enough, that K-State scores, and we're sitting here talking to Brian Kelly. Nobody wants to. He's had enough attention. This bowl game is about. Well, obviously LSU's there, but Brian Kelly's not on the field. Yes, he wants to get involved in the community. Blah blah blah. But K-State's driving, and and K-State fans want to watch the game, and we got to sit here and listen to Brian Kelly. And then late in the game, there was a random conversation about what the guys and there's on the field person Kelsey Riggs who was on the field reporting for the bowl game last night. They were going on. I got home just as the bowl game started, so I don't know who was calling the games. But I knew who the silent reporter was, because she's on pregame shows for the ACC network. But they were going on about a random conversation about what to do in a delay at the airport and whatnot, and talking about sleepwear and whatnot. So then at one point, funny enough, one of the K-State fans commented on a Facebook post that I read on that I'm a part of, saying that I could have done a better job commentating this game than those guys. So they had their moments last night, that's for sure. And Nebraska, that was funny. So they're all over the place with that one.
We didn't face Adrian Martinez every year, so that was incorrect for anyone who missed it. I doubt anyone listening did, but if you did, they're talking about Adrian Martinez, and they said that Colin Klein said that once he saw Adrian Martinez's name in the portal, he was in his car heading to Lincoln, and he's like, I have to learn about him. We face him every year, and I'm thinking, what? No, they don't. I got to face him in the Big 12. I'm like, what? And I was like, but in my mind, I was like, you know what? I'm letting it go. Whatever. K-State's out. I'm happy. I'm letting it go. To their defense, they did correct themselves. I got the stats for Deuce. We're gonna get ready to have your socks knocked off with some Deuce stats, by the way. So Deuce, how many 100 plus yard games did he have on the ground, Eddie? How many did you say you thought it was? You thought it was how many?
Seven or eight.
Are you including the bowl game or not?
I'm including the bowl game.
He had 9.
Ooh.
9.
Not far off.
He had 9. There were only 4 games where he was under 100 yards, and one of those games he had 99. So if you take the 99 away, there's only 3 games with less than 99. That was Texas Tech, OU, and Oklahoma State. Now listen to this, Eddie. On the ground this year, Deuce rushed for 1,404 yards and 18 touchdowns. That's on the ground. And that was an average of 6 yards a carry for him. Oh, and by the way, he also had 49 receptions for 468 yards and 4 touchdowns. So total, Eddie, Deuce ended the season with doing quick math here, about close to 1,900 all-purpose yards and 22 touchdowns. That's wild. I mean, what a season. I don't think he had a sophomore slump, Eddie. I don't think there was a sophomore slump in line for Deuce. And you mentioned it. 21 carries, 146 yards, 3 touchdowns against LSU there in the Texas Bowl. He's just special. He's special. And I don't know how many more years we'll get to see him at K-State. Could be anywhere from 1 to 3. I mean, it's a wide range. I would assume it would probably be on the closer to the one side than the three side, but you never know.
Never know. Never know.
You never know. Deuce is wired different. Deuce is wired different than some of the other guys, so you never know. But either way, he will be here next year, so that we do know. But either way, what a dominant game, Eddie. What a dominant game for K-State. And like I said, I don't care about LSU being underhand. I don't care. I mean, yes, there's obviously there's no denying it was a break for K-State. It would have been obviously a closer game if LSU was full strength. But I'm going to be 100% honest with you. If LSU was full strength, I still think K-State wins this game. I really do. I mean, K-State was completely dominant. They were 42-7 at one point in this game, and I felt like it wasn't necessarily what LSU wasn't doing. It might have been a little bit on the defense, because I didn't feel like K-State actually played their best game defensively. I felt like their tackling was kind of sloppy. But
usually it is anyway.
This is true. Oh man, but I felt like it was less about what LSU was doing. I felt like it was more about what K-State was doing. Skylar looked great. Skylar was hitting throws. How often do we talk about earlier in Skylar's career, you know, just being inconsistent with throws, missing guys? He was not missing guys.
No, he was not. He was perfect. At halftime, like 7 of 7 for 95 yards.
Those throws were on point. He was hitting guys. He was hitting them short. He was hitting them deep. He was scrambling when need to. He was moving around really well. I did. The offensive line was blocking really well. They were making holes. They were protecting Skylar. They were winning at the line just in general. I just don't think it really would have mattered. Who else you had out there? I mean, I just think K-State would have won this game regardless. They just played really, really well. It was one of their best played games of the year, in my opinion. But needless to say, they were really good. And seeing Skylar spin it the way he did, man, like you mentioned, 21-28, 259 yards, 3 touchdowns, no turnovers. What a way for Skylar to go out. What a way for him. There's so many storylines from this game, Eddie. There's so many different directions you could go. And I'll briefly touch on a few of them. But you got to start with Skylar. I mean, you've got to start with Skylar. He is K-State, Eddie. I mean, I think it was Chris Klieman who said it, but he's K-State. He's what embodies K-State. He has poured his heart and his soul for the last 6 years into this university, and he's gone through so many ups, so many downs. And to see him, we talked about this before the bowl game, Eddie. This is his chance. This is his chance to write that final chapter, to be able to close the book, to finish what he started. This is why he came back. He came back to finish what he started. And to see him be able to do that, this crazy book, this crazy six-year journey that he's had at K-State, to be able to see him come back, go through all the trials and tribulations that he did this year, and then be able to end it on his terms the way that he did in that bowl game against a team like LSU, you really couldn't ask for anything more. And then to see how happy Skylar was after the game, see the ovation that he got, see all the love that he got. it was just, special. To see him win the MVP of Texas Bowl was awesome. Well-deserved. Deuce probably would have won it if Skylar wasn't. It wasn't necessarily maybe for the feel good story of Skylar, but I think Tim Fitzgerald said it best. Deuce would have wanted Skylar to have it, so I think it ended up in the right person's hands. So it was just great to see Skylar go out this way. And I just think that we all need to really thank him for what he did the last 6 years for us, because this football team was lost without him. I mean, these last 2 years, they were lost without him. They could not get that damn thing going. Made him realize how great he was. So, definitely wanted to hit on that. And I think the other big story, Deuce was special. We know what Deuce does. Deuce did what I thought he'd do. So, as great as it was, I expected that. So, I don't know if that was as much of a surprise or a storyline to me. Aside from enjoy it. Enjoy having Deuce on his football team. He is the Aoka Lee of K-State football. I mean, that he's Chris Kleiman called him the best player in college football. I will not go that far. I saw some K-State fans agreeing with it. They're like, yeah, he is. Oh, boy. Okay. No, he's not. He's great. But there's some really good football players in college football. Just a reminder to people out there. But look, he is absolutely one of those running backs in college football. There's no doubt about it. Just enjoy, if not the best, he may be the best in college football. He may be the best back out there. I make an argument that he's the best running back in college football. I can make that argument. So just enjoy it. Just enjoy being able to see that. It's just special. Just special talent. Players like that don't come around every day, especially to K-State. But really the final thing is Colin Klein, taking over offensive coordinator duties for this game after Courtney Messingham. And, boy, you could tell Courtney Messingham didn't call that game. Holy moly. Goodness gracious, what a contrast in style. And people might be like, I don't know what you're talking about. I mean, the play didn't look necessarily that different. It wasn't necessarily – first off, I did think the plays looked significantly different. I thought that the play calling was a lot more creative, and it was a lot more, get this, Eddie, wide receiver friendly. Maybe you don't lose Tyron Howell if you actually run an offense.
More like that, absolutely. Absolutely.
Because we know Malik Knowles, Tim Fitzgerald and Malik Knowles haven't been terribly happy. Cannot blame him, by the way. Can't blame him at all. With kind of the way that Courtney Messingham's offense was running, it just wasn't getting him touches. He felt like he wasn't utilizing his abilities. Colin Klein did. He got the ball in Malik Knowles' hands, and look what happened. He got 2 touchdowns. That's the thing. That's what always bugged me. I'm not going to go to Courtney Messingham rant, but that's what always bugged me. Courtney Messingham just did not use the talent on that offense correctly.
We've been talking about that all year long.
Exactly. He just didn't use it. I mean, Deuce bailed him out. Deuce had some great games. He didn't use it. And Tyron Howell, I still sit there thinking, gosh, that could be the one that got away because that guy's good. I mean, he was real good out of JUCO. K-State had an opportunity there, and they just couldn't get the ball. But he couldn't get the ball to Malik either, and that would have been horrible if Malik would have left in the transfer portal. And granted, I guess he could still, but hopefully K-State saves that from happening with the performance in the Texas Bowl and some of the coaching changes. But they got Malik the ball. Moral of the story is they got Malik the ball. They took advantage of his abilities, and look what happens. I mean, look what happens. You know, when you put him in the right place, when you dial up the right calls for him. Look at Skyler. You know, look at Skyler when Skyler has the ability to play with it with more of a rhythm, play within the kind of the rhythm of the offense a little bit more. That was the biggest thing, Eddie, is that the rhythm. He's had such more of a rhythm with that offense. I mean, they had that real short intermediate passing game really working, and then they took those deep shots when they prevented themselves, and then running the football. They didn't get that cute. I mean, for the most part, it was pretty much like, we know you can't stop this. We're beating you at the line. You know, we're going to run it down your gut, and you're not going to stop us. And you know what? Then we're going to throw some little wrinkles at you. You know, we're going to get Malik going side to side with his feet. You know, we're going to get Phillip going deep down the field on a post. Let Skyler use his arm and drop it in there. You know, we're going to take a page out of the Chiefs playbook and do the fullback shuffle or tight end shuffle, little shuffle pass there on a short yardage play. We're going to, if it's third and long, or if it's second and long, we're just going to get part of it back. And we're going to give ourselves a third manageable. How often do we see K-State in like a third and 10, third and 10 plus because something goes off the rails of the offense? K-State did a really nice job of that. You only can take so much from one game, especially from a defense that's missing a handful of guys. But seeing what Colin Klein did, I think puts him as the favorite to be your offensive coordinator next year. I would be surprised if, yeah, I'd be surprised if Chris Kleiman went another way, another direction at this point.
Yeah.
You know, Colin Klein just called a great game. The players clearly love him. And, you know, I mean, Chris Kleiman said that he said the same thing about Colin Klein as he said Scott Thompson. He said he embodies K-State. You know, and so I know there were a lot of fans that weren't in favor of Colin Klein as the permanent offensive coordinator prior to the game, but after the game, I think a lot of people's tune changed there. So, you know, for me, I honestly, Eddie, I think that you can't let a game, you know, you can't get caught up in the moment of the game and just make an emotional decision about it. You know, I think Chris Klein is right to step back and to kind of let the game pass, go through the process, have a conversation with Colin, have a conversation with some other guys, and then make an informed decision that's maybe not based on just the emotion of the game. So I 100% agree that's the right way to do it. Don't make any knee-jerk reactions there, but it's still hard for me to see him, you know, still see him going another direction. So good for Colin Klein. Good for Colin Klein there. And then finally, just tip of the cap to K-State Nation. Going down to Houston on Tuesday night, the first week of January, and then showing out that way, you know, going in there and filling NRG Stadium with purple. It's a beautiful thing. You know, we began the season, Eddie, filling AT&T Stadium in Dallas with purple, and now we're filling NRG Stadium in Houston with purple to end the season. So kind of fitting beginning and into the season. But kudos to the fans. You know, they always travel so well for the bowl games, and to be able to go out there and represent and to do that is a special thing. It's what makes K-State just such a special place. And as Skyler said it, as he said in his interview after the game, he said, you know, when we say family at K-State, we mean it. It's not just some cliche. Like, we mean it, you know, and it really is. So just a great night. K-State fans are on cloud nine. I was on cloud nine. I'm sure you were on cloud nine. And just can't say enough about the way that they performed, the way that they ended the season. Good on all, like I said, good offense, good defense, good special teams. Good job for Coach Kleiderman, Coach Klein, Coach Kleiman. They just coached their tails off, and the players played their tails off, and the fans cheered their tails off. So it was a special night, and you have an 8-win season now, and so you go into your offseason. K-State just landed a huge transfer, linebacker transfer, by the way, from Maryland. So that's a huge get for them, and so they definitely got some momentum going on the recruiting side of things as well. So things, they got some momentum right now. You get a win, just keep carrying that momentum on into the end of the offseason, and this K-State football team could be pretty darn good next year, depending on what happens with the quarterback position. But we don't need to worry about next year yet, Eddie. We don't need to worry about next year yet.
No, not yet. Not yet.
We can start talking about next year next week. We can start talking about it next week. Let's enjoy it. Let's just enjoy putting a beat down on LSU and winning eight games. Chris Klein has won 8 games 2 of 3 years now at K-State. You'd assume that will help him take a little pressure off going into next year, ending the way that he did. And, you know, let's see what K-State can do. But, sorry, I'm dipping a little bit into next year. I just will say this, though. I think you're looking at an improved defense. I think you're looking at an improved offensive line. And you're looking at Deuce Vaughn. So if K-State can just work the receivers a little bit, get production from the quarterback, they could have something pretty good there next year. But enjoy this one. Think about Skyler. He had an amazing game. K-State was great. And just happy for all of K-State Nation, Eddie.
Yep, indeed.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
First episode of the new year 2022. This is episode 81 of the Purple Project Podcast Weekly. Alex Aiden, out there in San Diego, California. In the new year here. in Manhattan, Kansas. Cold Manhattan, Kansas. If you want to add that here on this late Wednesday night, here as it is past 11, as we begin to wind down this edition of the podcast. Yeah, I'm not going to start look too far ahead to spring ball just yet. I'm going to enjoy this win here. Of course, if you just joined us on the podcast, if you missed it last night, obviously this episode will go out on its usual day. Friday, K-State handles LSU 42-20 in Houston, Texas in the Tax Act Texas Bowl. Deuce Vaughn, 4-touchdown game. Scott Thompson, 3-touchdown game there. And Deuce Vaughn saw the end zone. Yeah, was it 4 touchdowns? That was 4. Now I'm getting my numbers all crossed up. It's late. But Scott Thompson. Yeah, Scott Thompson, 3 touchdowns. I had it up here. Yeah, he had it up here. Let me go to Deuce Vaughn here before I really botch it up here. Deuce Vaughn, yeah, Deuce Vaughn, 3 saw the end zone 3 times. So, yeah, 3 times. Scott Thompson threw for 3 more touchdowns en route to the what Gene Taylor talked about. He wanted an ass kicking. He got that, a late Christmas present on that. So.
Can I just say, Eddie, too, when you asked what players you thought were, remember before the bowl game, we talked about players like on the rise, and what was the players on the rise, and players like on decline?
Yep.
I can't remember what we called it. But I said Phillip Brooks, and Phillip Brooks was their leading receiver. So I'm just going to pat myself on the back for that.
Yep, another prediction, right, for Alex on the podcast. Yep, go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to say, I've been the Phillip Brooks train all year long. I said it before the Stanford game. I said it before this game. I've said it all game. Phillip Brooks, I thought he was one of their best offensive weapons, and people just don't talk about him a lot. But he really is, and there he is again. I'm telling you, he's the go-to guy on that offense. He underrated. Phillip Brooks is underrated, Eddie.
Yeah, definitely. He's going to be one of those guys that's going to be back hopefully next year. And so for that receiving core, and I think Malik Knowles is a junior, if I'm not mistaken, there as well, too. I thought he was a senior.
Blake's a junior, so fingers crossed, Eddie, that he's back next year because he – man, I really, really would love to see Malik in another coordinator's offense. I just really would.
Yep, that's for sure. I'll have to see him back here next year. And that quarterback position, we'll have plenty of time. We'll have plenty of time to discuss that here as 2022 calendar year gets going here. So K-State, your Tax Act Texas Bowl winners, 42-20. Over at LSU last night as we're recording this podcast on January 5th, 2022. This episode 81 will go out on its usual day that the Purple Project Weekly goes out on Fridays. So be out on the lookout for that as well. Yeah, Alex, you mentioned the fans. There are plenty of them there. We know. We talked about it way back before the season started. We talked about it prior to the Stanford game, how big K-State Nation is down there at Texas when they showed out yesterday down there as well. So felt like a little bit of a home game, if you will, down there in Houston last night. At K-State did what they needed to do, take care of business. Now, again, we'll have plenty of time to talk about this. Obviously, you mentioned the big recruit that K-State just got. That K-State defense looking mighty scary if they live up to that potential.
Waiterman's got some boys, Eddie.
Yep. So is the offense, too, if obviously Malik does decide to come back for us last year. And speaking of that, Ty Zettner, the punter for K-State, tweeted out that he is coming back for his final year as well. So Eli Huggins, a couple weeks ago on the podcast, he made his announcement, not on the podcast, but Twitter, made the announcement that he's coming back. Khalid Duke, he'll be coming back off the injury last year, along with Adike and Uzama, he'll be back as well. I'm just really not naming off players, so I'm gonna get off that soapbox, but yeah, K-State.
Pretty much everyone's coming back for the most part when you look at the defense. I mean, that's why you're on the soapbox, Eddie. I mean, pretty much they're all coming back. The thing is a lot of them are seniors next year, so it'll be that 2023, that will be the season where Clayton is going to have to kind of kind of refill that defense up. But yeah, they got most of them back next year.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's for sure. That's got to be exciting going next year as well. So a lot more discussed on really K-State as a whole next week. Or going forward, as we're going to be recapping kind of our giving our post grades on the whole entire K-State squad as they come to a close. Meanwhile, K-State officially ends their football season last night. Baseball will be around the corner. I mentioned this on a couple of dailies already. Tennis will be kicking off here. Golf, I don't know if they're going to be getting much going with this cold out here, with the snow, supposed to snow another inch or two. According to WIBW, we'll see if that materializes. But tomorrow's supposed to be like a high of 12 out here in Manhattan, Kansas. So I'm sure you're enjoying your nice, lovely winter weather out there in San Diego.
In the mountains, Eddie. I just got to drive an hour west into the mountains, or 45 minutes west in the mountains. I can see some snow.
No, yeah, that's that's true. That's true. So we'll see.
But I won't. But I'm not. I don't have an interest. I'll stay here in the warmer coastal area.
Yeah. That's kind of where I want to be right now. And then you got basketball as well, getting into the Big 12 play as well. The K-State women's team off to their best start since 2009. Off to their best start in a long time. So K-State. I called that segment, I believe, last week or the week before on the weekly podcast, Trending Up and Trending Down. That's what I called it on the podcast. So K-State women's team trending in the right direction. The men's team still staying pat, if you want to say trending down. You can go with that as well. So some work to do there. So as we begin to close this podcast, Alex, anything else you want to hash out here before we put this one, tie this one in the bow?
Eddie, I just want to talk more about Courtney Messingham. No, I'm kidding. I don't want to. No. I'm kidding. I promised, no. Honestly, Eddie, I think that I'll just kind of end it with this. You know, obviously we've got more to talk about when it comes to football, because as you mentioned, you know, they've landed a huge transfer. They've got the original recruiting day coming up here in like a month or so. So they've definitely got some, you know, got a little bit of work to do to try to fill some final scholarships, try to, you know, kind of round out next year's team. I'm sure we're going to get more announcements in regards to players who may be coming back, players who may be transferring, players who may be going pro now that the bowl game's played. So we'll need to keep an eye out on that, kind of see the way that shakes out. But you know, as we said, you know, we can talk about that, in the coming weeks. In the meantime, that was just a great moment for K-State. It's been a while, Eddie. It's been a little while since we've won a bowl game back. I want to say it was the Cactus Bowl back in like 2017 or 2018. I don't know. Alex Delp was the quarterback. So and that tells you what you need to know. it's been a little while. I think that's the last time K-State won a bowl game. They lost the Liberty Bowl, then they didn't play in a bowl, and then they're on the Texas Bowl. So, and they weren't in a bowl before the Liberty Bowl either, because that was Bill Snyder's last year. So it's been a while. It's been a while since they won a bowl game. So just take it in, K-State fans, enjoy finally winning a bowl game. I legitimately think it's been like 4 years since K-State. It's 4 or 5 years since K-State's won a bowl. Five. I think it's been 5 years since they've won a bowl game. So it's been a minute. So enjoy it. It's nice. I know people try to kind of devalue in this day and age. They're trying to kind of devalue bowls, but don't let anyone devalue what K-State did last night. You know, they came out, they played really well, they won a good bowl game, and they won 8 games. So celebrate it, enjoy it, celebrate Skyler, reminisce on his career, and just. Continue to realize that, look, we're lucky to be able to witness two spawns. and what he does. It's just a truly special one, and like I said, you know, we're lucky to have a front row seat to it. So, you know, congratulations to the whole team for ending the season the way that they did. I know it's a little bitter with the way that they lost to Texas and Austin, but, you know, they did a nice job bouncing back from that head scratcher and getting a really good win over a good LSU team. So, kudos to the football team. Kudos to those guys. And all in all, I think we had a pretty good time talking about K-State football for 2021.
Yes, we did. Yes, we did. Officially last night, K-State Nation, the football 2021-22 season came to a close finally. K-State, your Texas Bowl champions, 42-20 last night over the LSU Tigers. Definitely fun talking about there. Another football season on the Purple Project Podcast comes to a close. I'm sure we'll still talk about it more once we get some updates of what's going on. I'm sure news will be coming out here and there. We'll talk about it here on Triple P, that's for sure, obviously. So for now, that closes the book on football, but plenty more discussion with basketball now as we turn our attention to them, unless something else comes to fruition with big news around K-State. And oh, by the way, this is a K-State podcast, so we'll make sure we have that covered, whether it's weekly or daily edition of the podcast. On that note, episode 81 of Purple Project Podcast Weekly is in the books. Alex Aiden in San Diego, California, appreciate you as always hitting you up, hitting me and the folks listening to this podcast with the numbers. Eddie Greer back in Manhattan, Kansas. Thank you guys for listening to another edition of the Purple Project Podcast. We'll be back next week, a big week, full weekend for basketball. Can the men get themselves on track? Can the K-State women continue to build those blocks towards a possible contending in the Big 12? We'll see about that and other news. And obviously, stay tuned with dailies as well. I'm in cranking those out daily for you, so I'm doing the best I can on that. No, again, the numbers for this podcast, Alex, is starting to creep up, so we're doing our part.
Keep subscribing, keep listening, get in on Purple Project Podcast.
All right, go Cats! This has been another edition of the Purple Project Podcast. We're out.
Purple Project Podcast.